Thank you very much. I do appreciate it. Got it. Thank you. Welcome all. Interesting subject, why managers matter. I'm sure that it's a conversation that will extend for many, many months or many, many years to come. As Tanya said, please feel free to pop questions into the chat box. I'm sure Paul and Nikolai won't mind answering some questions after the event if there's a volume of questions. So yeah, we'll try and cover as many questions as we can in this next 90 minutes. But if you do want to understand more or learn more or ask questions, please feel free to put them in the chat box and we'll capture them with Tanya and we'll go from there. So thank you very much. So first of all, I'd like to thank Nikolai and Paul for attending this afternoon's debate around why managers matter. I'm sure many of you do not know Nikolai and Paul, but just for common courtesy, Nikolai has been promoted. So congratulations. He's a professor at the Organisation of Leadership, Norwegian University of Life Sciences. So congratulations, Nikolai, on your recent promotion. Consulted with many large consulting businesses, companies, and many redesign projects and programs. And you know, he's the author of Organization Design Redefining Complex Systems. So welcome, Nikolai, a real stalwart of character, I'm sure will stimulate us all. And Paul Trzedzinski, co-founder of the EODF, internationally renowned pioneer, apparently, Paul. Absolutely. So in wholescale change management, like I said, former chair and co-founder of the European Organization Design Forum. And again, a huge consultancy background with large companies for over 30 years. So I think both of them have got the credibility to debate, you discuss this whole question around do why managers matter. So I do appreciate, thank you for your time. What I thought we'd start off by doing is do a simple poll to start with about do managers matter? And we'll just have a see to see how many people, where people are starting. And then once Nikolai and Paul do their influencing superpowers, then we can then see at the back end if anyone's changed their mind. So if it would be kind, Tanya, to launch the poll, that'd be fabulous.
It should be shared right now for folks so they can see it. And actually, most of you have voted. We've got 88% participation. So, and a definitive answer.
Yes, managers do matter. Well, do you want to sign off or do you want to continue?
All right.
I have the easy job today, I see.
So we've got that. Why do managers matter? Well, 91% said they do. So you might as well put your feet up, Nikolai.
Yeah, it looks like I've got the more daunting task here, Nikolai. Yeah.
Right. So the structure of today's session really is I'm going to allow Paul to start off with, and then Nikolai to do a sort of a 7 to 10 minute pitch around why managers matter from their perspective. And then I'm, as the host, I'm just going to ask, you know, two or three short questions to both of them, and they will then respond back in their own way. And then we'll open it up to the whole of the plenary whole group just to ask any questions. Please feel free to put your hand up, you know, shout at me if I miss your digital hand. And then we'll do a bit of reflective session once a few questions have been asked, etc. And then we'll close off, closing thoughts, look at the poll, see if the poll's been changed. And then we'll hand over briefly to the EODF for a little 10, 15 minute spot for themselves. So so look forward to it. Please feel free to contribute and debate and share your views. Paul, do you want to, over to your good self, young man, to put the case forward?
We flipped a coin and I get to go first, right? hi, everybody. You know, before I throw my slides up on the screen, you know, this question about do managers matter and do we need them and all these things, I thought this question isn't new. It goes back probably to the 1980s and maybe even before that. I think when I was introducing socio-technical systems and doing organization plant redesigns, and, you know, and then Semler's book came out. And so it's an ongoing conversation, right? That's at least 40 plus years old. And when I would go to, I would take American managers to Japan in the 80s, and the Japanese would say, well, what's new in the US? And the answer would be, well, self-managed work teams, right? And self-managing work systems. And the Japanese would ask 5 questions, which would basically challenge the thinking about, you know, they would ask questions like, well, could people decide not to make that product? Oh, no, they couldn't do that. You know, could they decide to not, they don't like a customer, so they're not going to supply it. Oh, no, they couldn't do that. And so, well, they would ask all these questions, and then they would eventually say, so what is it that they are allowed to do, right? And how would that all work? So it's a conversation that's been going on forever, right? I thought, you know, my job is to sort of put the possibility out there. Let me see if you can, hopefully you can see my screen. What I need to do is get it to, how do I get it to?
Bottom right hand corner of your screen.
I can't, well, you know, it's like, it's hiding. Okay, for some reason, I can't get presentation mode. I don't know. I can't see it here. Okay. All right. It doesn't matter. Hopefully you can all see this. You know, so I'm going to take the position in this conversation that they don't matter. You know, and it's an antiquated convention that got embedded in Frederick Taylor's thinking, and, you know, and it's outlived its usefulness and outlived its functionality. I think the popular literature, the corporate rebels, the beta, you know, the open space beta, the Neil Slogging, the Aleppo, the Laloux, they're all pushing for the elimination of hierarchy and the elimination of management. And while I agree in general about it, I think I would argue that they're pushing the position for the wrong reasons. You know, I think it's a outdated convention that we ought to move away from, right? You know, I think it all begins with this question about why do they exist? Why do we need them, right? What would be the purpose of having a manager, right? And what purpose does it serve that serves the organization and that serves the people? You know, and so from an organization design standpoint, you know, the question is, why would you need an FTE that is got the title manager or supervisor? You know, and are they performing a function that could only be performed by a human being with that title or that that set of job cards, tasks, if you will, right? So I think it begins with this question of what purpose do they serve? Why do we need them? And then the sub-question is, are there not other ways to satisfy those requirements other than to create a convention called a human being who is in some role or function like that? You know, Michael Zanini, either Zanini or Hamill, posted this picture. I don't know if you can all see this. This is essentially the org chart for Meta, right? From Zuckerberg all the way down to the lowest software engineer. And this is actually 2 versions of the org chart that really exists in Meta. There are from Zuckerberg to the first line data engineer or software engineer. There are 11 levels of management. There are 11 people with a title: director, manager, data manager, vice president, et cetera. You know, and And you have to ask yourself the question, you know, what purpose are all of those levels and functions serving? And could they not be repurposed in a way that would make a hell of a lot more sense? You know, and if you're the person on the bottom, the weight of all those people above you, it's got to be oppressive, right? And so, you know, it's a challenge when you create these jobs and you give them these titles, and then you ask, what is it that they're doing? And you know, in meta, the question, of course, is obviously, why do we need 10 or 11 levels? Maybe somebody has a reason and an explanation. So far as I can tell in the literature, there's not a lot of explanation for why somebody like a meta organization needs 10 or 11 levels from the top to the bottom. Even if you account for the size of the organization and the number of people, you have to ask yourself, you know, what's the average span of control and what are some of these other things? And they're quite small, right? The convention is still 8 to 10 people per manager. And so the number of managers becomes massive. You know, I thought, you know, first and foremost, you know, managerless boss, it's bossless doesn't mean leaderless or rudderless, right? I mean, you know, I think the subtitle of the book that got Nikolai and I even talking about it, right? The Why Managers Matter, the subtitle is The Perils of a Bossless Company, you know, and so I thought, first and foremost, bossless, not having managers doesn't mean that there are not leaders and that there's no direction or anybody can go and do whatever they want. The second is, I think we confuse structure and hierarchy. They're not the same, right? They're two different words with different meaning. Structures could actually be quite liberating, right? Hierarchies, on the other hand, become very arthritic, right? They become calcified, they become more rigid over time. The people in them continue to repeat and have the same conversations they've always had. So, you know, I think we get caught up in a conversation about structures, hierarchies, and managers, and all three of those things are different, right? And can be applied in different kinds of ways in the organization. And so, I thought, you know, we need to sort of understand that. You know, there are lots of different roles that people can play. Oversight, linking, bringing people together, directing, telling them what to do or how to do it, doing for them, right? You know, I think, you know, one of the issues from a manager point of view is oftentimes the people in those positions are actually doing the work of one level down. They're not doing their work. They're doing the work of their people. They're staging, they're preparing. When people could be doing these things for themselves, right? Training and teaching, they could be doing that to each other and with each other. And so there's a facilitating role, or maybe there's an integrator, there's a coach, you know, and the question is the convention of a manager the right convention for addressing those role issues? This slide is an example from a project I did 25 years ago in Corning. And it's essentially the structure of a team. It is what the team is doing to support itself from a self-managing point of view. And so, and when you look at these words, a lot of them are traditionally manager assignments, hiring and coaching, running meetings, scheduling, doing cost analysis, customer support, you know. And so the question that we asked ourselves 25 years ago is, could we not take the work that was traditionally done by supervisors and managers and integrate it into the day-to-day work of a team, right? And so how do we redistribute the work that's been traditionally done in a way that would eliminate the need for a position called manager, you know? And then in this particular case, the challenge was, how do we then find value-added work for those who have that title, who are no longer being asked to do that work. You know, so the art of design is to select the right set of mechanisms to deal with workflow, disciplinary and interdisciplinary contact, emergencies and surges, dependencies and interdependencies. You know, and that, you know, we should, the last question we should be asking ourselves is the question about, do we need people? Is there sufficient work to create an FTE that would have the title that would require some management oversight of other people, right? And so the design of it ought to be to select the right mechanisms. And I would argue that when the convention of manager was created 100 years ago, there weren't a lot of new mechanisms. We didn't have the internet, we didn't have technology, we didn't have information systems and the kind of support that we have today that enables us to be able to see much more broadly and more horizontally across, so that the old convention of the leader or the manager as the integrator, the coordinator, the linking mechanism no longer is the only way to do it. There are lots of other design choices, right? You know, if I, there's lots of different ways to link and coordinate. Only one of them is to have a manager, a liaison, an integrator. We can create collateral structures. We can create parallel structures. We can create IT teams, systems teams, multifunctional teams. We can create forums, daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, yearly, councils and committees. We can create documents and tools that enable people to understand what they need to do and to be able to work together to do it. We can create rituals and rules for if it gets out of sort, how do we bring it back into balance and alignment, right? And so there are a lot of other tools today that weren't available maybe 100 years ago that we could be using that would replace the need for hierarchy and replace the need for a manager, right? There's a good book called Simple Rules, right? 2015. And Kathleen Eisenhart and her co-author, they talk about creating simple rules that help people understand what and how to do work. There's no need for somebody to define it for them, right? Gore is probably one of the better examples of an organization that is operates by having simple rules, right, that help people decide and figure out what to do and how to do their work, whether it's about configuring, about budgeting, about making choices and decisions, right? You know, companies like Atlassian in Australia, they have created rituals, processes, procedures, stand-up meetings. They have, on a monthly basis, they have a thing called FedEx Days. These are things that bring people together to enable them to collaborate, coordinate, and pull data together in a way that enables them to decide things. You know, today we have visual displays, whether they're Trello boards online or face-to-face wall displays and wall charts that help people figure out how to get things done. Kanban charts and Kanban walls and Scrum bands and things like this are all mechanisms and procedures and processes that we have today that I would argue eliminate the need for a manager. We can create metrics, targets, goals. And we can create, you know, the book Liberating Structures, I think, does an outstanding job of helping us develop simple tools and processes that enable us to work together in ways that get things done without having to have the convention of a manager, right? So, you know, I think we're constrained by our old thinking. I think we're habituated into it. You know, the subtitle on this slide is Think Out of the Box, right? Today, robots and bots and internet things and machine intelligence and artificial intelligence are ways of eliminating the need for humans to do work that doesn't add a lot of value, right? So think out of the box. The picture on the left is actually the smokestack for a garbage disposal incinerator plant, right? in the middle of the city. In the middle of a city. It's designed by Hundertwasser, famous artist, right? The top right is Case Western Reserve University, the School of Business, designed by Geary. Right. Think out of the box. There are a lot of alternatives today that enable us to take that person who has that title of manager today and give them something more valuable to do other than overseeing people, monitoring and watching what they're all about.
One minute left, young man.
Okay, actually, 2 minutes. I have one last slide, so it's perfect. How's that? Yes. So, perfect. You know, here's my thought. I'm taking the position that we ought to get rid of them. We ought to repurpose them, right? And we need to repurpose managers, and we need to rethink management and what that means. We need to find a future that those that are currently in the role to get excited about, right? And we need to build managing work into every team and into every team member's roles. Right? The work doesn't necessarily go away, but we need to rethink about where it should be done, how it should be done, and who should do it. With that, Gareth, I say, thank you.
Thank you, Paul. I do appreciate that. That's fantastic. So
here, let me get out of screen share.
I'll just share some bits in chat box and that. So thank you, Paul. Very much appreciated. Thank you, Sue, about the strife of self-management. You know, there's a lot of things around self-organization as well. Yeah. There's a lot of talk around that. The whole debate around manager and management, and there's obviously a distinct difference there. So, is it less about manager and more about management? So that was something else that was mentioned in chat box. Hierarchy and structure, Paul mentioned, and again, a lot of people have been talking about the difference between hierarchy and structure and the importance of it. And Jody also mentioned around the role of the manager might change based on technology. As technology advances, then the role of the manager of information sharing or command and control, whatever, might shift as well. So thank you for those points in chat box. Nikolai, over to yourself. Why do managers matter, or don't they? Or do they?
Thank you, Gareth, and thank you
or
Paul,
do they?
for your piece. So first of all, I should perhaps say that I'm a bit of a stand-in here, I feel, because these are the authoritative works on this topic. My name brother, as we say in my language, Nikolai Foss from Denmark, a much more famous and successful academic, has written the book with Peter Klein on the left here, and the late Harold Levitt wrote Top Down about 10 years ago. That's also an excellent book. It's extremely well written, and I can recommend it as well. So these are two key sources if you're interested in this topic. And by the way, they use two different perspectives. So that's also interesting. So Nikolai Foss and Peter Klein, they are trained as economists originally. Harold Levitt was a psychologist, and for many years he did research into group dynamics and things like that. So they come at this topic from two very different angles. So I'm a more modest contributor to this. I do cover it briefly in my own book, and I have written several blog articles about it based on my own observations. And one key observation that I have is that many of the stories that we are told about this topic are simply false. And I'll give you one example here. And unfortunately, it's from our own organization, EODF. So this is something that they posted on their Facebook account a few years ago, where one speaker at the conference claimed that there's an organization, a bank, Handelsbanken, which has no organization chart, has no divisions, no product managers, and so on and so forth. Basically, no managers, no structure, it seems. And he claimed that this is the reason why Handelsbanken at the time had the highest profitability of all European banks. And what do we do about these kinds of stories? They're told all the time when you go to conferences, not only EODF, but I also hear it at other conferences. The same kind of guru stories about hero managers or hero companies. Well, in this case, let's Google it and find out how it really is. It takes about 2 minutes to Google this and disconfirm it. First of all, no organization chart, just Google Handelsbanken organization chart. This is the main one, but I could also find, for example, from my own country, Norway, they have a detailed organization chart. It's available online. You could go to their website and download it. Here's a press release. It says, Åsa Wilén has been appointed the head of Handelsbanken's forestry and farming business area. She will also be a member of the bank's group management team. And remember, the claim was that this bank didn't have any divisions. This sounds like a division to me. And the third claim was that there were no product managers. Well, you just go into LinkedIn in this case and you search for Handelsbanken and product manager. And I got 871 hits for that combination. This was a few years ago, it might even be more. So, you know, why are we even telling these stories? I'm asking myself, when it's obviously false and everybody can, you know, do their own research and conclude the same. Well, there are, however, companies that have tried to remove managers, at least the title. This is the well-known article by Gary Hamel, who has also written a book about this and is using this example quite frequently about Morningstar, a food processing company in California, which apparently does not have any formal managers, at least, that doesn't have any with a title manager. And as I've said myself else, you know, in other occasions, I think that Morningstar is doing some smart things. They do have some interesting ideas that we can perhaps learn from. But the question is still whether it, you know, it works and in all areas. So a few years ago, I taught a course in Germany at the business school there, and they wanted me to cover Morningstar and the Harvard Business School. They have a case about Morningstar, quite detailed one. So, but before teaching this class based on this case, I did the same thing as I did with Handelsbanken, and I Googled the company, and I'll show you what I found. This is from the Los Angeles Times. It says, tomato plant owner in 1.5 million battle with water regulators over waste and odors. It's Roofer is the CEO. It's Roofer's second major tangle with the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board, which in 1995 cited him for dumping too many pollutants into surface and groundwater. Last month, the board leveled similar charges of putting too much salts, nitrates, and organic waste into groundwater. We don't see that magnitude of problems very often, said Wendy Wiles, environmental program manager of the control board. So my question is here, okay, they don't have managers, but maybe they should have a health, safety, and environment manager who could be accountable for Morningstar's performance with regards to pollution and waste and so on. So, oops, we are jumping here. So one thing I've also observed is that there is this tendency among people who advocate this view that to kind of dichotomize the world. You know, they're saying that, okay, we have traditional organizations, you know, full of rules and bureaucracy, hierarchy and whatnot. And then you have progressive organizations. So which one do you want? that's the way, you know, they see the world. Of course, it's not either or, and you cannot just divide all organizations into these two types. The other problem here is that the consequences of implementing the recommendations, the prescriptions that they offer, are often the opposite of what is intended. So what I've done on this slide is that I've provided links to relevant literature, so academic research that tries to test many of these ideas. So for example, in terms of removing middle managers, which the corporate rebels that who created the previous slide advocate, you know, what's the consequence of that? Well, Nikolai Foss, the author of the book that we mentioned, has done one interesting case study of Oticon, the Danish hearing aid manufacturer. And he found that removing managers actually led to more centralization, not less. So because the CEO remained, as the head of the company, and was now making all the decisions that the middle managers used to do before. There's Jordi Gittel's very good research on team processes, finding that higher spanner control leads to worse team processes, worse team dynamics in the airline industry. There's an interesting case study from Canada showing that when you remove middle managers and try to reduce hierarchy, you have an informal hierarchy that's popping up instead. And unfortunately, what people are recommending is to combine this with more informal ways of working. And that's a toxic combination. And that, again, there's lots of research on this that says that, often you get less unit autonomy, not more, because higher level managers will be more tempted to intervene in what the teams are doing when there's no formality regarding roles, mandates, rules, and so on. Often worse collaboration between teams because the roles, the mandates are unclear. Lower psychological safety because people are more uncertain about how they will be evaluated, what their tasks are, and so on and so forth. And also lower job satisfaction shown in one study. So all these, I hope you can get access to the links here when this is shared later. Then you can ask, okay, so maybe these studies are from large organizations. How about startups? Well, here are three interesting studies that basically all show the same thing, that as opposed to what we would expect, we expect startups to be high kind of chaotic organizations, improvising their way to success and so on. Same finding from the US, from the Netherlands, from Germany, that it pays off to have middle managers. So in the last study here from Strategic Entrepreneurship Journal, concluded that the companies with middle managers had a 33% higher chance of developing a successful new product than the other ones. So the other thing that I want to mention is that as Foss and Klein point out in their book, the challenge is also that we tend to kind of adopt one organizational vision and then generalize that to all companies in the world. So we find one outlier in some country, and because they have managed to do something, we think that every company should do it. But companies are, of course, very different from each other. So just to give one example, there's a book by Denning on agile management where he's using this example from Spotify. And he claims that in Spotify, you don't need to have approval from your managers in order to launch a new feature, for example. So given what I've said before, we should be very skeptical of these claims, but let's say that it's actually true. So the opposite was IBM during the 1960s and 70s and 80s, which had the opposite system. They had a non-concurrent policy where any department could veto an initiative by any other department. And I have an article here by a scholar who claims that, at the time, this was actually a sensible policy because IBM had an integrated system. So there is a very high risk that a change in one part of the system by one department could make things much more difficult for other departments. This is very different from Spotify, which has a modular product architecture, where it's very low risk. If you make a change in one part, it's not going to ruin the other parts. So that's why you can have more experimentation with a modular, flexible product architecture than with the integrated product architecture that IBM had 30 or 40 or 50 years ago. So whether something makes sense, that depends on the strategy, the technology, the processes, and so on and so forth. Now, the last point I wanted to make is why all this is a problem and why I've been a little bit interested in it. So apart from the topic itself, the thing I find a bit unfortunate is that I feel like we're spending time on the wrong things, because to me, this is not, the most important discussion. And that also means that we fail to address the issues that actually matter. There are lots of other organization design challenges out there that we could be spending time on and that we are not spending time on because we have these idealistic discussions about futuristic organizational forms. And in some cases, as I've shown, we're even providing misguided advice, which is easy to debunk if you just do a little bit of research. And perhaps most importantly of all, I don't feel that we're helping members of ODF or EODF to become, you know, better advisors. So I know that many of you are external or internal consultants. And I've been, you know, both myself, I was an internal consultant for 3 years and I was in consulting firms for 15 years. And one important priority, of course, when you have that role is to earn a seat at the table. You want to influence decisions with your clients. And during my 18 years as a consultant, I never once had a client who asked me about, you know, a bossless organization. That didn't happen. Not only clients, I mean, other managers I spoke to, I can't remember a single instance where anybody brought that up as a problem, you know. But there were all kinds of other changes that they wanted in the organization. So why are we spending so much time on this, which at least I don't perceive to be a key challenge among the clients and other managers that I speak to? And I feel that that's what ODF and EODF should be doing. They should provide people with useful knowledge, processes, methods, and so on that can help them do their job. Thank you.
Thank you, Nikolai. Very much appreciated there. So before we turn over to the group, I thought I'd ask just simply one question each, you know, both Nikolai and Paul. So from an organizational perspective, how mature do you think organizations are in order that they could, if possible, become manager-less? You know, how mature are they? Is it an easy shift, or is this just a fad, a conversation around changing labels? We'll still have managers, we'll just call them something else and the whole conversation goes away. So, you know, Paul, you know, or Nikolai, who wants to go first? Just give us a bit of insight around that, please.
You want me to go first, Nikolai?
Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
Okay. I mean, you know, I think maturity is an important question, right? When you ask the question, the first thing I thought about is, I've been in places where you say to the employees, we could easily get rid of your boss, but you're going to be accountable for the results. And they go, I'm not so sure about that. So it does require a certain amount of maturity. If you go to some of the self-managed work sites that I've been to, where people truly take responsibility and accountability, it's startling. They hire each other, they fire each other, right? They give feedback to each other. That requires a level of emotional intelligence and maturity, right? And to Nikolai's, use the phrase earlier, psychological safety, right? Is a big part of that. So, you know, I argue that it's an antiquated convention, but not every work system is ready for it, from my point of view.
Brilliant. Nikolai, what about your good self?
Well, I'm not sure if maturity is the right concept. I mean, I don't feel mature, at least, to kind of relinquish my manager. So, you know, I'm working in the university now. Mm-hmm. I'm here in my office at the university today. And in academia, we have quite a lot of freedom. So to some extent, we are self-managing, you know, teams and people. But even here, there's some hierarchy. We have a, you know, department chair, and we have a dean and the university president and so on. And I don't understand why I would want to get rid of those positions. So, for example, in my department, you know, one discussion is who should teach which course and how can we make sure that the course load is balanced between different people. I don't want to be involved in that contentious discussion. I'm happy to delegate it, or rather escalate it, to the department chair. I'm very happy that somebody else can take the blame for that decision. I don't want to get involved in it. Another example, we have, you know, as most other universities, collaboration problems with other schools and faculties. And I don't want to be involved in that. I'm so happy that we have a dean, you know, which can spend his day meeting with other people, discussing these difficult issues, trying to resolve conflicts. And that means that I can focus on the thing that I'm supposed to do, which is to research and to teach our students. So I'm very happy. So I don't expect that, you know, if I become more mature, my system becomes more mature, this need will ever change.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's really useful. Thank you, Paul and Nikolai. So open to the floor, really. You know, next sort of 15 minutes or so, if anyone wants to stick their hand up or make a statement or you know highlight their position or ask Nikolai or Paul a question. So over to you, good self. I'll try and manage it as much as possible. And please shout if I miss your yellow hand that you put up or your virtual hand. That'd be much appreciated. So who wants to start with a question or a statement or a reflection on what they've heard so far? Go for it, Dawn. Your hand's up. Go for it.
Hello. It was just a comment that I put in the chat, actually, but I thought I would offer it to the group because it's a live conversation that we're having in the organisation that I work in. But it's about... perhaps hierarchy can be helpful, as you've described, Nikolai, in some ways, sort of freeing people to do the work that the value-adding work they need to do. But what is harmful and what we do want to remove from the organisation are some dysfunctional hierarchical behaviours that get in the way of people being able to do their best work. And so I just wanted to offer that to the group as a thought about hierarchy.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Dawn. Yeah, much appreciated. And you're absolutely right. There's a huge thing about behaviours, systemic behaviours, not just management, behaviours from a personal perspective, but how does the system behave in its own right? Absolutely. Thank you, Dawn. Ken, go for it.
I recently read an article by Warren Kinston on 7 styles of communication and action. And I'm from a JAX tradition, which is a structuralist position, which has a recognition of a differential capability or an elitism. There are other types which come from a value system of participation, of getting everyone's point of view, exploring issues and bubbling up and brainstorming. And sometimes that is very good. My friend Bernard Moore has introduced me to appreciative inquiry. I think it's called an intuitionist approach. Now, Bernard and I have great difficulty talking across these styles. And I know I tried to present and went to the sociotechnical group, and I tried to introduce how sociotech and the JAX system could go together. Extreme difficulty in talking across the languages or the value systems. So as I look across the 7 systems and think about management theory, and I think of all the books I've been exposed to, one of the prolific writers is Jay Galbraith. I interviewed him at length. He basically ignores vertical dimension, except for span of control. That's all he says in his books. And most of the theories, when they reduced levels in the 80s, they had no theory on which levels to take out, why, and they had basic screw-ups. So value added, as I think, really well explained in the Leadership Pipeline by Drotter and Schramm, they describe GE, and they talk about the pipeline and cognitive ability at each level. And the added value is in that cognitive ability. So when we tried to go with agile people, we tried to integrate RO and agile, a total mismatch of vocabulary. We can't even talk to each other because in agile, everything about vertical or differential capability is basically hidden. So I just offer that we have these two languages. That's very difficult. Now, my own theory is if you get the structure right, then there is a place and a time and an issue for which the other 6 modes are very appropriate. If I had a JAX structure in place, I think I would tell my friend Bernard Moore that AI would work much better. I would tell my friend Paul, if we had a JAX structure in place, we could put in sociotech much more effectively. You'd have far fewer failures. Anyway, that's my pitch. And I'd ask you, my question is your reactions to that.
Yeah, before we go to Jennifer and Jody, I do want to pick up on what you mentioned around the chat box around the role of design, but anyone's immediate reactions or anything to what Ken said? Go for it, Paul.
Well, you know, I mean, Ken, as I was listening to you, I wrote down failures. No, you know, failures. Volvo, Oticon, Sai Brown Bavari, there are 100, probably, I may be exaggerating slightly, examples of where we've gone to self-managing work systems and eliminated levels without necessarily thinking about it, or even thinking about the operating business model. And so the old version of Volvo doesn't exist because they couldn't produce a car at the price that Toyota could. Great idea, great concept, but not very well, right? And there are a lot of examples like that, right? You know, so I think, you know, I think you're really right. It's, you know, there's no... It was more, and I think in the chat box I said, I think it's more about a humanistic point of view and a bias that the designer is bringing to the party, or these popular writers are bringing to the party, without, as Nicolay says, you know, a lot of theory and testing of all of that. So yeah, I you know, it's hard to argue the position that I took, but. You're exactly right.
Brilliant, thank you, Jennifer. Yeah, before we jump onto the onto Jody's comments, yeah, what do you want to bring to this discussion, Jennifer?
Thanks, Gareth. I was just curious in listening for if you're either way, you're talking about management or removing management, how do you then handle taking this strategy and translating that into the work and the results? So I'm curious as if you remove that accountability or, and I think Nicolai, you were talking about that, you know, if you take away the manager, where does that accountability sits and where does that translation then land within the work that's done and the results that are delivered if you don't have the management there to direct the work?
Paul, Nicolai, do you want to respond?
I think Paul is the right...
go for it, Paul.
In the picture I showed about daily work, right? I think the design question is, you know, where should the responsibility and the accountability lie? And how do we, as designers, help people clarify what that all looks like, right? And where it should be. You know, you take the work of the work description of a manager. I actually did this once. We created a deck of index cards with all of the tasks that the manager did on a daily and weekly basis. And we started reallocating the cards, right? And say, okay, well, what's left? And what's left was mostly about, and if it doesn't work, who do I take out back and shoot, right? The accountability question. And then is it the individual or the team? And then how do you design other elements of the system to support that, right? Whether it's, you know, in the example that I had, the daily work, we had a pay for knowledge. Oops. And a pay for skill system, right? Others, and learned how to do that and were willing to support their team in that way. Then there was something in it for them, right? There was an incentive in some way for it. So I don't know if I'm answering your comment or not, but I think you can do it. I think you can do it that way. You know, Jay would do a racy chart, right? He would do a racy chart. That would be his way from a design standpoint of making sure that everybody understood who was doing what, and then put that racy chart up on the wall as a visual display. So if you ever wondered where to go, it wasn't, you had to go to your manager. You could go horizontal to another individual in your team or another team.
Thank you, Paul. Jennifer, did he answer your question? Come on.
I think we got close, Paul. I get what you're saying about it's spreading that accountability out across the team and pushing the accountability to understand the strategy and build that into their own work rather than waiting for or relying on a manager to say, take that strategy. Here's what it means for the team that works for me. And then these are the priorities that we have. So you really have to get crisp on your strategy as a senior leader team and not have a lot of fluff around it and revise it as you achieve those goals or the market changes and things like that. And I think that's a challenge for leaders, no matter what hierarchy they have, is to be crisp on that strategy. So,
and the word embedding comes to mind, right? We don't do sometimes a very good job of embedding the intentions on the new change, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is that follow through part about leadership. How do you anchor and embed it in a way that people can behave consistently, breathing in and breathing out, right?
Yeah. We got Jim, there, Paul.
Go for it. Sorry, Jenna. Jim, Anna, and I think Stuart put his hand up as well. Who wants to go first? Go for it. Jim, Anna, or go. Who wants to go first? Go for it, Stuart. And then we'll have Jim and Anna. Or Anna and Jim. You're on mute. You're mute, Stuart.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, we can hear you. Good. Thank you.
Okay. I think that the trend is to push down capability where the value is being created. In other words, when information, decision making, and skills are pushed down, then the people that are closest to value creation do better. The productivity goes up, performance goes up. And that doesn't have to be right at the operating model or the value chain. That could be any part of the organization. So a general principle is that a good manager constantly wants to push down information, decision-making, and skills. And by the way, you can't just push down one. You have to push down three. You can't have decision-making capability without the information and the skills. You can't have skills without. So you got to push down all three. So as managers continuously push those capabilities down, and as of the last decade, being increasingly supported by digital technology, because digital technology is doing the same thing, is that the role of the manager starts changing. Because as you push that capability down, and it doesn't necessarily have to be just at the operating model. Like I said, it could be at other levels of the organization. The role of middle managers starts going away, starts disappearing. Not all of them, but it starts changing. But the point I just want to make is that the role of the manager changes. So in some organizations, I'm here in the Silicon Valley. So in some of the Silicon Valley firms, what you're finding is not talking about management, but talking about governance structures. So in other words, these managers start moving to a different role, which is the interpretation of strategy and customer needs to the team, and then pushing down capability to doing that. So the issue is not necessarily getting rid of managers, but it's getting rid of the managers that we've known in the past and actually developing a new management system or new management roles that are much like the team itself, that are much like the roles of, they're really an extension of teams in a way. So it blurs the role and it changes the role significantly. That's the point.
Thank you, Stuart. Yeah, Anna or Jim, and then Nikolai. Do you want to go first, Jim or Anna?
Okay. I think wrong button. There's a device that we were given by a client, and it was it came out of the blue. And this was an organization that was founded by three four-star U.S. Army generals, and they were having difficulty with their consultants talking with their clients. And the issue was they spoke two different languages, but they used exactly the same words and syntax. And it was brought to me when Paul put up that slide with, or maybe it was, I'm trying to remember which it was, that had the comparison between the sort of the command and control old structure and the new age structure, I'll call it. And the device that came to us preparing for that engagement with them was what would happen if you multiplied the two polar extremes one by the other, as opposed to choosing between them? And how do we get people to talk about that? And the device that came to us was hierarchy so that what? And on the opposite hand, it would be sort of self-determination so that what? Or entrepreneurship so that what? Versus command and control so that what? And the interesting thing was when they got, so the two teams came back with their lists, the hierarchical group had one item as the answer to so that what? And the other group came back with 7, 10 sometimes answers to each one of the elements. So Paul, if you could share that slide with those two things with people, I think that, and just think about that idea of left side times right side, as opposed to left side or right side. What do you get? And they came up with a very interesting sort of blur of managers manage things and leaders lead people. And every individual who was in a people leadership position had to meet a new, totally new set of requirements and conditions for success.
Thank you, Jim. Do appreciate it. Anna.
Hello. Thank you. I really appreciate this discussion. And where I started was, it's not like me to participate, and I just couldn't feel like I could press on a yes or a no in the poll, because I really think it does depend. And if I go back to one of the examples that I think Paul brought up in his presentation was W.L. Gore. The only reason W.L. Gore was self-organizing is because Bill Gore, when I'm not going to work in a bureaucratic organization. So that's why I don't mean it in a only a humanistic perspective, like, you know, the business matters, the structure, you know, all these things matter. But ultimately, unleashing people's ability to show up for 65 years or however many years they can show up in business, they actually do require to align with some of their preferences. And I think some of these organizations are really driven by leaders' preferences of, I don't want that command and control, back to what, I'm not sure who just spoke before me, but I agreed with the opposites. These are two opposite energies. If you can combine them brilliantly, fabulous. Management, leadership, not managers of people. However, I'm in an organization, so this is the hysterical part of it. I've in an organization that is hierarchical and is has managers of people. But as I've lived in this organization for the last 5 years, having a real belief in moving bossless, I think is dictatorial bosses controlling others. That's what is not useful or whatever. I personally lean in Paul's direction, saying, let's move into a place where we distribute the work so there's really great clarity and we can actually collaborate effectively. But ultimately, what's been shared already is who's going to be taken outside. What is the clear process about that? So we actually think that, you know, people are treated equitably, or, you know, the whether the responsibility is on an individual if I just did something totally outrageous, or, you know, how we spread team accountability and how we actually grow people rather than just firing them. I think the bottom line I'm hearing from everyone I'm going to come back to is, what is the mindset of the leader? What is their preferences? And how can they stomach being inside the organization that they live within? And if you match that up, so we're not speaking different languages, sometimes it'll be people go here and people go there. And sometimes it'll be you really define an organization that integrates the opposite positives of all the things that we're talking about. And I personally land now on opposite positives is the way to go, so that you can get the most diverse group of people who can collaborate together to create sustainable results. But loving the discussion.
Thank you, Anna. I do appreciate it. Yeah, Nikolai.
Yeah, I had a couple of comments. So regarding what you said, Stuart, you mentioned that, you know, effective managers should push down to the lowest possible level decisions. And I agree with that as a principle. But still, it's the managers who decide and should decide what should be delegated. And from that, it also follows that they sometimes need to decide to withdraw the decision rights that they delegate and centralize things. And there, we can make a comparison here to government. The same idea in government that, you know, in most cases, you would want municipalities to decide about their town or village, you know, for most matters that are of interest to them and of consequence to the people who inhabit the villages and towns. But if you have a COVID crisis, you don't want every village and town to make a decision about what the COVID policy should be, you know? So the same thing in organizations, there are certain decisions that are more architectural and that needs to be centralized. And that's, you know, a very key point for managers is to kind of understand when they should delegate and when they should centralize. And it's impossible and not effective to decentralize everything. So that's one point I wanted to make. And to Dawn, you had an interesting point earlier about functional versus dysfunctional hierarchy. And I think that's the key thing. And one encouraging development in academia with regards to the research that's taking place is that I think for the last 20 years, it has no longer been about for or against hierarchy or for or against bureaucracy, but it's about, you know, when should we use which approach. So for example, there's research on bureaucracy or formalization, as it's called in academia. And the question there is not, you know, whether it's bad or not, but it's the question is, how can we find out which rules are effective and when do employees actually want to have rules? So this is called green tape versus red tape. You know, there are actually many studies that show that procedures, rules, and so on actually are helpful. So the key is to find out when they're helpful and when they're not.
Thank you. Thank you, Nikolai. You know, Jody, you got your hand up. I think one of the questions I've got for yourself, it might be exactly what you put your hand up around, is, you know, if we talk about managers, bossless, we talk about, you know, dysfunctional structures and dysfunctional behaviors and stuff like that. You know, how does design have to change? How does it have to evolve? Is it not serving the purpose of organizations? And, you know, are we just having this conversation because we've got too many episodes of bad managers that we just need to have a different conversation? So, Jody, I don't know, all of those things, what do you want to bring to the forum?
Sure. I mean, it's good you said that, Gareth, because that's what I hear a lot. We've got, it's about the bad managers, and there's a lot. I appreciate what Anna did, which is bringing the perspective of what it feels like to work in such an organization. What I feel like we're missing is the perspective of the manager. So that's what I want to bring in. Because I've spent a lot of my career being in a big organization as a manager, you know, right in the middle of senior management. And I think I was pretty good at that job and I really loved it. And I loved the company I worked with. But this is what, you know, what my day-to-day work looked like. I have, you know, a big project, a big challenge, something to do. And I have a great boss. I have a budget. I have a great team. So everything's working for me. and I might even be really successful with that project. But what do I spend my time doing? I spend all of my time trying to get approvals and aligning with people and getting buy-in and reporting on my progress. And maybe after, you know, maybe I get my project completed, maybe it takes a year or two. The work required to do that project was probably 2 or 3 months. So all of that time I'm spending on, you know, bureaucracy, hierarchy, politics. This is why I think some of the things, some of these ideas are really inspiring to people. Like for me, I came to it, this idea through Frederick Laloux. And he took, and you know, leaders in organizations are not bad people who want to use command and control, but leaders are the product of the way we've designed organizations. And that's why I think this is such a great conversation, because we should be asking ourselves, how can we do this much better so that people can really, really perform and get the work done?
Yeah, no, thank you for that. Yeah, and you know, Raoul, I mean, you bring in the army element there. I don't know if you want to expand on that, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm an ex-military man. Apologies for that. And there's a different style of management in the army. Absolutely, very much that command and control and stuff like that. So I don't know if you want to expand on that briefly.
Yeah, I mean, Gareth, I mean, you know, just, I mean, amazing session. So thank you, Nikolai, thank you. You know, Paul, for this amazing session, really enjoyed it. And I was just sort of, you know, looking, I was trying to draw a graph actually on tech involvement and human involvement, you know, as I'm thinking of different companies like Spotify, Amazon, you know, the agricultural industry. And I just thought of army as an institution. And I realized that, hey, you know, in all the ranks, we don't have the manager rank. We have a, you know, a colonel, a brigadier, a general, but we don't have someone who's a manager. And I was just wondering, hey, is that on purpose? Because the corporate world has learned a lot from the army and vice versa. But if an organization like the army is it, you know, doesn't use the term manager, you know, would corporates also want to, you know, do something like that and, you know, have other terms which are maybe have, you know, different sort of capabilities attached to it than having a word manager, which, you know, would create so much of, you know, sort of meanings for us.
No, good. Yeah. I mean, we're really good at changing labels in industry. So perhaps we replace some of the managers with generals, lieutenant colonels and brigadiers. And it might, you never know, it might change the whole emphasis of how we perform in the organizations. You never know. So, yeah, before I just, you know, summarize and give some questions, you know, some bits and pieces. Anyone else wants to add any points, or if they want to raise anything to Paul or Nikolai, because there's some amazing stuff around design and etc. That anyone else wants to raise their hand or put the point across? No? I mean, it's interesting when you look at cybernetics. Oh, sorry. Go on, Shan. Oh, you got your hand up.
Yes. I was just kind of reflecting. Thanks, Gareth. Hi, Paul. Hi, Nicola. Good to see you. And thanks for your great insight on it. So In the same sense of, as Rahul mentioned on the military force, if we kind of take a lens on the political elements of it, I question, you know, likes of, you know, White House and likes of, you know, number 10, are there any managers in that place, you know, politically driven? They're kind of leaders in trying to drive elements. So there are something to learn from those as well. Yes, there are leaders not with a great, you know, future thinking, you know, hence the countries have kind of, you know, some of the countries we've struggled a bit during the external event. But there are elements where weak countries been managed through kind of some sort of a leadership rather than a managerial elements of it. So it's worth kind of reflecting on that as well, Gareth.
No, thank you, Shannon. I do appreciate, no, thank you for that. Yeah, and we've had a great conversation. We've got about another 20 minutes left, but we talk about controlling elements of the organization. We look at managers as enablers. Again, is it this changing, you know, are managers not enablers? We talk about dysfunctional behaviors, whether it's at the systemic systems level, people level, or at the functional level. We look at people have discussed around actually, should we be more focused on the function rather management, you know, the structure versus the hierarchy. And we, you know, some of we talk about, some of us said about somebody at the helm and steering the organization. And that links back to cybernetics and the notion of that helmsman that's, you know, plotting a course, you know, going off course, recorrecting, and but always, you know, directing. So what is the role of, is, you know, who is the helmsman in an organization? If it's not a manager, who else might it be? And you look at design. Sorry, go for it, Paul. Yeah, you've got your hand up. Go for it.
It goes back to my Japanese story. You know, we're not saying that a managerless system is leaderless, right? I don't, Nicola, neither one of us are saying that a management, so leadership is necessary. Direction, focus, purpose, right? I think, you know, that's never going to go away. It's sort of like, you know, every living system, a structure. We're not trying to do away. I'm not arguing for doing away with structure. I'm arguing for doing away with managers as a structural convention, right? I'm all for getting rid of hierarchy, right? But, you know, there are others certainly on this, in this call, in this group, who could make very compelling cases that having people with that title and the requisite authorities, as Ken just put in the chat, is important, right? Because all systems have some structures. You can't not have it, right? Or it devolves into chaos and disorder, you know? So I think what my position is, and maybe it goes back to Stu's word about digital technology, right? As designers, we ought to be looking at new mechanisms, not old mechanisms, right? Digital tools, artificial intelligence, information system technologies, and things like this give us the ability to design value-added work for people that people could actually enjoy. Right? Jordy, when you were describing the role of the manager, I'm not sure that sounded like a lot of fun, right? maybe there are parts of it, right? But you know, how do we do it in a way that excites, energizes, mobilizes, and leverages the talents and the potentiality of people, right? And you know, relying on an old convention like a role or a position called manager, I think is limiting us, or potentially could limit us, right? We ought to be more expansive than that.
And it's interesting, going back to Nikolai's first point around why we're having this conversation, and the title is Why Managers Matter. And what occurred to me in reflecting this is maybe the title should be Why Does Design Matter? Because when you speak to a lot of when you look at a lot of organizations, there isn't a huge amount of design capability, knowledge, or know-how in the organizations that exist. So is it, you know, should there be a conversation around actually, you know, how do we make design more a bigger deal in our organizations? And so, might some of these points we're talking about in this today be lesser points if we had more design capability, more knowledge and know-how, managers, leaders with a greater understanding of benefits, the pros, the con, the pros of great design? So I think is, you know, an additional conversation, because I do think there is a stronger design agenda needs to take place in many organizations to address what we're talking about really here. Sorry, Nikolai, you put your hand up.
Yeah, I agree completely with what you're saying, Garrett, that organization design in general is underestimated and, you know, not done often in the right way or in the competent way. But to Jody's point, there might be more to your story, Jody, but from what you told us, I did not see anything there that necessarily would suggest that that structure needs to be removed. But if a company is spending 2 or 3 years to carry out work that could be done in 2 or 3 months, it might not have the right structure. So it should be restructured in a better way, you know, maybe a better alignment between the work processes and the formal structure. Maybe the approvals are unnecessary in some cases and can be combined. Maybe there are overlapping roles and responsibilities and so on and so forth. There are lots of possibilities here, but the conclusion is not necessarily that you need to remove structure, but you need a different structure in place instead of the one which is not functional. And but to this whole idea about bossless firms, I mean, it's often used, as inspirational material during conferences. But my observation is actually that it sometimes has the opposite effect. I can tell you one anecdote from a conference I attended in October last year in Berlin. And this was not an EODF conference, but another conference. And the corporate rebels were there to present their message. And they showed the exact same slide that I used in my presentation here. And there was a woman next to me from a large German state-owned organization. And when the corporate rebels showed that slide, she made a picture with her phone. And she whispered, I'm sending it to my colleague. And 2 minutes later, her phone was buzzing. And I asked, so what did your colleague say? And she said, she says she's depressed. Because, my interpretation is that, of course, we get depressed because we're sold this impossible dream that we can have organizations with no rules and procedures and everybody's trusting everybody. There are no conflicts to be resolved. We don't need any managers. And that's not inspirational to me, at least. If you want inspiration, read a poem or go for a walk or do something like that. Organization design, why does it have to be inspirational? Well, it has to be effective. It has to be effective in terms of making organizations more productive and people happier in their work and more satisfied. That's what it has to do.
Thank you, Nicola. I do appreciate that. What I'd like to do is just briefly hand over to before if everyone goes disappears. But thank you very much, Nikolai. Thank you very much for Paul. Thank you everyone for contributing to this. There's an amazing amount of data and information and insights on the chat, which we'll capture along with the recording. But before we finish and close, I'd like to hand over, I believe, to Lorena or Anissa around the EODF. Is that okay? Is it Lorena?
It's perfect, Lydia.
You can pass the baton on. Thank you, Gareth. I'm just conscious that there is this hand up from Bruce, but it blends so well with his wallpaper that probably no one's seen it.
Exactly. Did you want to jump in, Bruce, before Anissa?
Sure. I think it's keep it a quick comment. You just said it, Gareth. There's a wide menu that we've put together today, menu of both questions we have to face, challenges we have to face, and options that each of us has as we're each in our specific situation. There's a bigger frame. It's a smaller frame for me, and that is, I've realized throughout my career, I've made a lot of my choices of about things like this based on how much will I get paid for that? Will I get the job from this client if I use their frame of what is a manager, or if I use something more abstract like I might pull out of my own head or out of this conversation? And I have to remember that for myself, to watch my own motives. And luckily, as I get older, I get to be more sloppy about that than I used to be. But I do make choices about which clients I take, what projects I take on, I hope, based on my own motives, sometimes hopefully more pure than less pure. And so that's a big takeaway that I have, a very personal one.
With a touch of sloppiness, yeah? Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Bruce, for your contribution. I do appreciate it. Thank you, Anissa. I can't see any other hands, but yeah, Anissa, back to yourself or Lorena.
Sorry, I was struggling with the mute button. Thanks. I'm really gutted that I had to miss the first hour. Honestly, when I came in, I was like, oh, shame. I should have been here the whole time. But I was dealing with managers, actually, in a workshop.
Were they good ones?
I should have actually asked them to join the session. Probably there was a more useful way of using their time. Now, jokes aside, hi everyone. My name is Anissa. I'm part of UDF, and together with me is Lorena, also part of the board of trustees. And we just wanted to sort of use this opportunity to invite you and also sort of inspire you, because during the conference, the EODF conference in Bilbao last year, Bilbao is in Spain, by the way, for those who are like, what is she talking about? Anyways, we had a really, really nice conference, and it was great to do that after 2 years of not being able to do that since COVID. And we've gotten so many great ideas and inspiration from the participants. And one of the ideas was, as part of the conference, there's always an open space session. And for those of you who don't know what that is, open space is all about, well, it's actually in the name, is creating space for people to come up with their question and build the agenda from there. Whether it's a question they have, whether it's a case that they have, whether it's the point that Jody, for example, raised of, well, actually, this was my experience. What is your experience? And through that, building conversation. And some of them were actually like, why can't we do that also virtually? So we are going to do that. We're going to organize a virtual open space. I'm going to pop a link in the chat. In that link, you'll see all the details. We want to be able to accommodate both people on this side of the pond, which is, I'm based in Europe, as well as in the US. So in terms of time zone, you can sort of register when you see fit. We're intending to kick it off end of April. So if you have an idea, if there's a manager situation that you want to share about, or you have a question and you don't have the answer to it, but you also not looking for the answer, you just want to engage in a conversation, just join us. And then again, it's an open space. So we may end up with really great conversations or not, no idea. Either way, we're going to organize it and yeah, set it available for you guys. So I'm going to pop a link in the chat.
It's a manager-free zone as well, Anissa, which is good, isn't it?
Everyone is welcome. Managers in the US, managers in Europe, all across different continents. But everyone needs to also be open to be challenged. Because we're going to have open conversations, which are honest conversations. So yeah, and with that said, Lorena and I are going to sort of help drive this, but we get the support from some brilliant people who are connected to Cocoon, who are based, it's an organization based in Italy. So just FYI.
Thank you very much.
Over to you, Gareth.
Thank you very much, Anissa. Thank you very much. I do appreciate it. Open space, yeah, awesome. And like I said, in the virtual setting as well. So thank you everyone for your time. You know, we may, you never know, the next session we might have Why Design Matters, because I think it's probably something that also needs to be discussed. So we'll look at that. But no, I do very appreciate everyone's time. I suspect the poll hasn't shifted, but should we have a little go to see whether anyone's changed their mind and whether anyone's supporting Paul or whether they're all on Nikolai's side? Let's have a look here. Do managers matter? Oh, look.
Oh, it's shifting.
It's shifting slightly. You've got more friends. four people want to talk to you, Paul.
In the polarity.
You can send Paul an email and then you can connect and Paul can create a little group.
Yeah. In the polarity, you didn't give us a both and. Right.
Exactly. So there you go. 83%. So it was 91%. It's now 83%. So well done, Paul. You've managed to influence in this hour and a half. Well done. Longer may it happen.
Gareth?
Yes, go for it, Nikolai.
Yeah, I was just wondering that now at the end of this, I thought we perhaps should share with people that Paul and I spoke in advance of this session, and we found out that we are in, you know, more agreement than you would think based on our presentations here.
course you would.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's not similarities, absolutely. And also, as Paul, as you quite rightly said, Paul, you know, it's not that, you know, quite early, it's not about, it's less about getting rid of managers. It's more about, has their role shifted? Is their role changing? You know, et cetera. So it's about review of what they do, or what management is, or what managers do in the new world.
You know, and just one last comment from my point. I used to do a lot of work for Anheuser-Busch, and August Busch was always afraid that the people who reported to him wouldn't tell him the truth. They would only tell him what they thought he wanted to hear. And so he actually organized, as a ritual, debates within Anheuser-Busch, where he would put leaders randomly into one side or the other, right, and give them a week or two to research it and come back and take a position. You know, and so I think this format of a debate, I think, Jody, you put in the chat, it's an interesting way of doing this conversation. And you know, and it's also something you could do with your client. Having the client have a conversation about, do managers matter? And if we wanted them to matter and we like the convention, how do we do it in a way that works for everybody? Right. You know, so I love the idea of a debate. And Nicolay, I couldn't think of anybody better to have this conversation with than you. I really value your opinion and appreciate it. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, everybody, for attending. I do appreciate it. And thank you for your input. Thank you much for your contribution. Thank you for staying on so long. I do appreciate it. Tanya, back over to you, Supercell.
All right. Well, and thank you, Gareth, for making the time to jump in and facilitate today's conversation. So just as a repeat, if you jumped in a couple minutes late, this was recorded. So I will put a copy of it and the chat into our website, and then I'll send a message to everyone who registered to let you know when it's available. And I think Valentina, my counterpart there at European ODF, will probably post this as well. And then if you have any ideas for future debates or topics, ODF's Community Engagement and Learning team is always looking for these type of discussions to schedule throughout the upcoming year. We'll be a little focused on our upcoming conference in March. Let's see, it's in May, but we still have some time available in April if somebody has a topic they'd like to bring to the group. So let me know and feel free to reach out. I'll stay on the line for a couple minutes here afterwards if anybody has any questions. In other words, I wish everyone a great rest of your day and good health and some fun fit into it.
Be well, everyone. Take care.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you all.